It is January the 3rd, 2018, and this is the Joint Interim Special Committee on Public Education Appropriation. And basically, we're here today to hear the changes that have been suggested. Althea is going to lead our way on this. If any of you have questions as we go through this, we'll be happy to take those. Anyway, Althea's going to go down and talk to us from down there.
And then you can open this public hearing. I don't know if you did.
Yeah, do we do that after?
Oh, we can do that now.
We do it now, okay. Okay. We'll open a public hearing on the proposed legislation. Is there anybody here other than Althea that wanted to testify? I don't see anybody, so you're on.
Okay. Co-chairs, members of the committee, thank you for having me here today. For the record, my name's Alethea Miller, and I'm the legislative analyst with the Legislative Policy Research Office. So I'll be walking.
Just a little closer to you.
Closer?
Yeah.
Yeah, closer or further, but something's off, yeah.
Is it better?
Thank you.
Okay. Better? So I'll be walking you through the report on the adequacy of public education funding as required by the Oregon Constitution. So just a reminder, this is the third meeting. So it's January 3rd, and we'll be going through the final version of the report. In front of you and on OLS, you have a copy of the report, a copy of the executive summary, which Representative Wisnett has suggested that the committee create, which is great. So we have that in front of us as well. And then we also have a copy of the suggested changes that came out of the November 14th, 2017 meeting, and those are also available on OLS. And then we have some additional recommended changes that came out past that meeting date from members on the committee, and we'll be going over those and deciding whether or not to implement those changes. So I'll start by walking you through the changes in the report that took place based on the suggested changes from the November meeting. So if you look at the report in front of you, just page 2, we ended up adding a table of contents that was kind of suggested by the committee, and also something that just came up for clarity. Never done that before, but I think it makes it easier for the report to read. Just going into page 3, there was a request to add a paragraph that introduces the purpose and the charge of the committee, and specifically just like a general background more in relation to ballot measure 1. So that's on page 3. And then for the members, if you look at the version that you have, the sections that I'm referring to are highlighted in yellow, but it looks orange. So I tried to make that a little more clear. And then, of course, that report's online. And then just going on to page 4, we added the dates in relation to the case for the Pendleton School District versus the state of Oregon. So that case started in 2008 and then finalized in 2009 when the Court of Appeals made their ruling. So it was asked that we add those dates. And then just in terms of adding another paragraph on the purpose of the committee and really like the schedule and what this committee did. So we added that as well at the end. And so then just going on to page 6, we added some language on the quality education model and specifically how the QEM works. Since that was talked about at the last meeting, it was asked that we do that. So it's a pretty significant section there. And that's also from Doug Wilson, and it was in consultation with the Quality Education Commission and Brian Reeder as well from ODE. So next, just going on to page 11, we have 2 additional graphs that have been added, and those graphs are for the SBAC data, which was requested. So that's, again, that's Smarter Balanced. That's because previously we had the data for the OAKS assessment and SBAC all in the same graph, and obviously, as you know, the assessment changed. So because of that, it was requested that we have a separate graph indicating that. So for Exhibit 3, we have math, the average RIT score, which is Available there. And then we also have the exhibit 4, which is math, the percent of students meeting or exceeding the SBAC standard. And it was also asked by the committee that we get additional data, since if you remember, the last data that we had ended in 2014-15. So with the help of the Department of Education and Brian Reeder, we were able to get the data from 2015-16 and 2016-17. So we have that there. Which is why you're able to see 3 years of SBAC data. And so then just going on, oh, and then page 12, thank you, Richard Donovan from OSBA. He caught a typo, so we'll be adding that for the new version. So in the last paragraph on page 12, the word exhibit, there's an extra I, but it is still exhibit 6, so we'll just be correcting that. And then page 13, if you look at Exhibit 7 and Exhibit 8, we added the SBAC results again for the RIT score and also for the percent of students meeting or exceeding the standard. And again, this was for 2014-15 through 2016-17. And we were able to add the additional 2 years, which is really good. So we appreciate ODE giving us that data. And then just moving on to the next change. Any questions? And if there's any questions, too, I can filter them now. But then just page 21, there was a question that we add a footnote explaining Measure 98 funds per biennium at the end of the chart. So that's added. The general fund appropriates money to ballot measure 98 for the biennium, but then just the way accounting and the technicality of it, that number is inadvertently doubled. So that's why it's listed there. But the biennial distribution is the same as it was. So. And then page 23, we were asked for exhibit 21 to add the dollar amount and the percentage difference actually on the graph. So we were able to do that. And as you can see that change. And also just the fact that now we have the dollar amount distribution and the percentage. And then just moving on to page 24. It was suggested that we go back to the additional reports and add the information in relation to the previous ballot measures. That's specific to ballot measure 5 and measure 28 and 30. So we went back to previous reports, looked at that information, and were able to add in that data or the information about the three ballot measures. And then just moving on to page 26 and 27, where we talk about the cost drivers. So this section was also reorganized. I think it looks a lot better for clarity. Really appreciate Doug's work on that. It looks really, really good. But the changes that were made for cost drivers, we added in the federal requirement in terms of assessment. So that imposes an additional cost driver to districts, or it was thought that may. There's a line about that. We added in the cost driver about students in poverty, the cost driver about teacher shortage, and then also there was a request for homeless students. I did talk with Department of Education. There's no data necessarily saying that if the number of homeless students increase, it creates an additional cost for school districts, but it is assumed, you know, based on, well, if there's more homeless students, there's likely an additional cost. They haven't done necessarily an analysis saying that, so we couldn't put it into the report as a cost driver, but we did add that number on page 27 on the second large paragraph at the end. We added some data there, and thanks to ODE for providing that as well. And then also, just going back to page 26 in relation to PERS, we were asked to add the dollar amount with the percentage, noting that the dollar amount is estimated on a specific date. So we were able to add the dollar amount with the percentages as requested. And then just moving on to the end of the report, so page 28. We were able to explain the difference between $1.77 billion versus $1.99. Again, this is the Quality Education Commission. When they produce their report, they go off of the original budget, which they think is going to be appropriated. So that's $1.99 or $1.77, and then the actual amount that came in was $1.99, which is what you have. And then there's also a footnote citing the because there was a question in relation to maintenance, like how is maintenance an additional cost for a district and whatnot. And this in particular, we just wanted to clarify that even though that's in the QEM report, that paragraph, that increased maintenance also refers to ongoing maintenance. So that's really the cost there. And then page 29, the post-secondary quality education goals. That section was very much reworked and revised to clarify when the Post-Secondary Quality Education Commission ended, and Doug did a great job working on that, and just providing more information for the committee and the fact that these are goals that are ongoing, that we're working towards, that the legislature is working towards, but the Post-Secondary Quality Education Commission is no longer a commission that has ongoing work. And those are the changes based on the November meeting, and also just some feedback that I received after the meeting in relation to, you know, adding citations and whatnot. So any additional questions on that? Or
questions?
Okay. Great, perfect. So now we can go through the document. So it's this one, and it's available on OLIS. So it's titled Items for Discussion for the Joint Special Interim Committee on Public Education Appropriation. So these are some of the feedback I received after we finalized the report, and the fact that it needs to go before the committee since it's substantive by nature, and it's also not something that we discussed at the November meeting. So if you have the report in front of you, we can just kind of walk through those. So for page 7, there was a suggestion that this particular committee could advise the Quality Education Commission going forward to either look at Alternative 1 or Alternative 2, since, as you know, their request is that the legislature fully fund education for the biennium. If the legislature doesn't do that, then they have two different alternatives. The first one, Alternative 1, which is available on page 7, is to have the committee fund education over 10 years or 5 biennia. And the second alternative is to focus on pre-K and kindergarten. As you know, we have full-day kindergarten, but to put more money into that. That's something that's really emphasized in the QEM report. So it was just suggested by a committee member that maybe in this report we could add a line saying that this committee recommends that the QEM focus on Alternative 1 or Alternative 2, and that would be at the decision of the committee.
Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question. And I've read a number of the prior ones, but I can't completely remember. I feel as though it's always like one alternative is, you know, increase the money over the next X amount, and the other one is an actual, like, some policy substantive things, much like this is. Is that generally right? Okay.
Yes, that Representative Smith Warner, that is correct.
I mean, I think I would vote. I don't know that I would vote to either to suggest one or the other. I mean, I think it's useful for us to get the recommendations of the QEC. I don't know. Maybe I'm talking myself through this as I go. Because realistically, the first alternative is we have not yet done that so far. And so I guess the question is, each time this comes out, do we want to recommend the actual action thing versus the we just need to spend more money Alternative 1? So I guess that's not really an answer, but I guess I would argue I don't see a lot of utility in this committee or this report suggesting one or two. I think it makes sense to have as part of this, here's what the QEC recommends, and I don't know that it is going to do much, if any, good for us to recommend one of them to follow.
I don't know if it'll do us any good, but I have a real preference for Alternative 2. And the reason is that Alternative 1 basically says we do things the way we always have, only we phase things over a 10-year period and hopefully get to full funding. Alternative 2 says start with the youngsters, start with the pre-kindergarten and kindergarten age students, fully fund them, and then fully fund them as they go through the system over a 12-year period, which to me seems preferable, but actually, if we could accomplish either alternative one or alternative two, we'd be doing our job.
Yeah.
So, whatever. Anyway, when I read through it, that was kind of my reaction to looking at those alternatives. Arnie?
Yeah, I tend to be in the same place. I think the QEC can make that determination as they go and where they think they want to put the emphasis, which would be helpful to us. And I don't know that we telling them which one to take is the most appropriate thing to do. So I tend to be that way. I do tend to agree with you, though. If you're going to implement something, start at the beginning and move it forward, because that makes more sense. We didn't do that with 98. We funded it at the end as opposed to the other end. But a lot of the research would indicate that you invest in those kids early on, you don't have to invest as much later on. So I do understand that preference on your part.
Basically, for the last decade that I've been in a position of being the co-chair of the Ed Sub, I've been saying all along what I'd like to see is us to raise a new generation of Oregon children, all of whom had early childhood opportunities, all of whom were ready for kindergarten at age 5, all of whom were reading at grade level by third grade, and all of whom then are successful by middle school and go on to successful graduation. And so alternative two kind of fits with what, this kind of sermon I've been giving to people for the last decade, and I guess maybe that's why I was drawn toward it. Mm-hmm. Representative Doherty.
And I tend to agree with Representative Smith Warner and not necessarily make a recommendation that we choose one over the other. And I was looking at two, which there are no argument against whatsoever. But those of us that have been around since the woolly mammoths roamed the earth, we remember the 21st Century Act. And remember, by the year 2000, we were going to have the best educated children in the world, not in the West Coast, but in the world. And by 2010, I think we were going to have the best workforce in the world. And so I think what it is for us to make a recommendation one way or another, again, is going through and telling people, well, we're going to do this by this time and by this place and so on, without ever giving any resources to it. Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's just best to leave alone. I agree 100%. Tons of money should be going to early childhood. But I also want to make it as realistic as we possibly can.
And as the other member that's been around since the woolly mammoths, I can't disagree with you.
Yeah.
Joe, I'm going to stay out of this food fight for the moment.
Okay, I thought I saw your hand wiggle.
I can count.
Okay.
Senator Roblin, Senator Boquist, comments?
No, I'm going to stay out of this food fight. I'm waiting for the Big Bang Theory long before
the House is unanimous and no.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So the House consensus, I would say, is to not make a recommendation between the two.
Okay.
The Senate's okay.
That's
with
fine.
Okay. Good.
Okay.
Okay.
Next.
Okay. So we won't be adding that particular line. So then for page 29, just going on the second recommendation, it was more just like a confirmation. So just for the post-secondary, we're not, and this, it was just like, hey, can we just confirm this, that the committee agrees that at this point in time, 40-40-20 is not a, it's in statute, but it's not a quality goal, and therefore would not require a deeper dive into this by this committee for this report in terms of whether or not we're meeting it and for funding.
Okay.
I agree.
Any disagreements with that? I'm certainly there.
Okay.
Go ahead.
And so then moving on to the next one, so page 23 under sufficiency determination. There was a recommendation. So after the first sentence, it is the determination of the joint committee that the amount of money is appropriate for this 2017-19 biennium for K-12 public education is insufficient to meet the recommended funding levels of the QEC. After this, to add, however, the 2017 legislature increased the total 2017-19 PK-12 state school fund resources from $10.8 billion to $12.2 billion, including total state resources and total local resources.
Representative Wisdom.
For the good of the order, I will withdraw that recommendation. Okay. I think it's important. I think Mr. Wilson did a good job in putting some of that in the cost drivers and some of the other data. I think it's very important, however, that in the future we do talk about how much total funding, mm-hmm. and I think the QEC needs to address that. They need to look, when they're planning and talking about something, they have the money to do these programs, so it shouldn't, they should be addressing the total amount, not the, not just the general fund and the lottery fund application. I withdraw the recommendation to expedite.
Okay.
I'm fine with the withdrawing. I'd rather leave it in.
Just stop in the first half of that sentence.
I'm getting ready for the
Senator
future.
Boquist.
I like the data.
I'm fine.
Okay.
He wants to leave it in, or if he wants to throw it out, that's fine. Here's.
Okay. So he since that was
everybody happy, hopefully we'll come out of here with strong support from the entire committee. Go ahead.
Okay. So since that was withdrawn, we won't be adding that. And then for under on page 26. There was a suggestion to add the following text in relation to cost drivers for number 4. Let me just get that. And the suggestion was recent legislation has supported community colleges and 4-year public universities using free online textbooks, parentheses, open educational resources. The legislature and ODE should study the use of free online textbooks for PK through 12.
Questions?
It's more of just kind of a comment. We've talked about this in the education committees before, about access to it, and I think it's a great idea, and that's kind of as a trend now in education of having more mm-hmm. online books and this kind of thing. It was more geared to the colleges just because their textbooks are so expensive, mm-hmm. but I think in the context that we were looking at it, it was an issue of can we get the iPads and so on to the schools, to the students, so they can actually take them home and use them as textbooks and that kind of thing. And so I think that it's something that we should continue to look at, most definitely, whether it should be in the report, because it doesn't look like it says, you know, you have to do it. It's just recommending to look at it. You know, you may want to, but it's not a make or break issue for me.
Things have changed since I started teaching 50 years ago.
Yeah. I was only 40, so. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I'll withdraw. That was my recommendation. Mm-hmm. I worked that for the 4-year schools. During the Christmas holidays, my grandson, who is now a 7th grader, informed me his teacher used the Khan online mm-hmm. course as nice. Part of her curriculum and teaching one thing, and he found it very interesting. And there are free textbooks, so the suggestion was, and I'm sure that the chair of the Education Committee will continue to look at being sure that we look at free online textbooks and incorporating that into the curriculum. It's not only providing updated material, but material that can the teacher can add to, subtract, and do. So I think it's, these are things that I guess what I'm trying to say is I think the QEC, these are sort of things that they need to put in their report, not just strictly money. The fact that where they come up with 1.97, I could argue with them and things like that. But they need to look at system and reform of the education is my concern. So I'll withdraw that to expedite again. Sorry, Senator Boquist.
Senator Boquist.
Did you do the next one, too?
Are you getting soft over there, Colonel? What's the deal?
Did you do the next one, too?
I'm trying to understand if it's a good idea, and if the educator to your right thinks it's a good idea, and it is, you know, at least time free paper, that why wouldn't, and it is permissive, why wouldn't we continue to reinforce their desire to improve? I'm at a loss here. Why wouldn't we do it?
So
if it's a good
I
idea.
Have one comment on that co-chair. In particular. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I don't know that I'm opposed to saying they should continue to look at it. I would like to say that I just did a teacher for half a day at Madison High School through the Portland Association of Teachers a couple weeks ago, And I was in the computer science classes. And they're great stuff. I mean, the stuff these kids are working on is amazing. The teacher doesn't give them homework because most of the kids in that class don't have computers at home. So to me, it's more, while I want this to be an opportunity for as many kids, and I agree with you, Khan Academy is used, it's just striking how many kids still don't have computer access at home. And my concern is, I get wanting to do it as much as they can and where it makes sense and to use it at school. My concern is that if you go to just online textbooks, these kids who don't have computers or computer access at home, which I think is a lot more, even in, you know, in my fancy Northeast Portland district, there's a significant lack of access problem. So I agree with the idea of promoting it, and I just want us to be aware that there's still there's a huge discrepancy in access to the computers themselves.
Senator Boquist.
Well, thank you, Mr. Cohen, Madam Co-Chair. Why wouldn't we then just do what you just said and add that next line right in with it and say we should continue to study how to expand computer access for our students?
That sounds great, Senator Boquist.
You see, can you make that happen?
We can make it happen.
Yes, I was trying to write it down as you said it. So we should continue to study.
Yes.
We would continue to study free online access and how to expand access, computer access to students.
Both in school and at home.
Both in school and home. Yeah. I mean, the 21st century is here, folks.
What?
I mean, woolly mammoth isn't pawn in the ground anymore. He has an iPad or an Android, right? And he doesn't need to do anything but touch his nose to it to make the thing work.
Yeah. Or his short little arms.
Well, I just wondered when the co-chair was spending her half day as an educator, whether or not they confused her with the 16 and 17-year-olds there.
Oh, yes. There was a lot of confusion on that front.
And I think one thing, if you're in the schools, especially in the elementary, well, in all grade levels, so much of the textbook work now is done on computer, and it's done where you can go through and adapt lessons and so on and so forth and use these. And whether you are a rich school district or a poor school district, a lot of people have been able to raise money to get at least classroom sets of iPads. But I agree with Senator Boquist that we need to look at the availability. And I know that there are grants and these kind of things. A lot of Apple and some of the other companies are pretty good about getting computers into the schools. But it is the way of the future. And I still want a kid to be able to open a book and read a book. But for a cost driver, this is something. And so I agree that, the Quality Education Commission look at this and keep it going. I know on the Ed Committee we'll keep going and looking at this.
It is one of the cost drivers. We have that in the document. The new material talks about textbook cost as a cost driver. They always have been, and it's one of those things you have to adopt at certain levels, and by the time you really adopt it and use it, some of those textbooks are obsolete. So we've all known that for a long time. The issue is this the place where that report should go? And I guess from my perspective, it's fine because it is telling them to look at that. We should all be looking at it. And I would expect that the QEM does look at this on a pretty regular basis. We could ask Rita about that. But my understanding is that they have had those kind of conversations over the time as QEC has done. And that in the original conversation, there was a real need and a conversation about having access to computers for all kids. I mean, that's the problem. And it's not just all kids. It's also having it accessible in a usable way. If you don't have high-speed internet, and there are places in the state that do not have high-speed internet, it makes it really hard. It takes really persistent students. And I had one when we were on dial-up, and I was always amazed that we could spend so much money on a phone dial-up system for us. But they were persistent. They did it. They used it, and they learned how to make it work. But most kids, when you have really intermittent internet access, it's really hard. So that's another big issue that we as a state need to eventually tackle. And I don't know that it needs to be in the QEM document.
And I think it's just kind of understanding, because it's also the idea, I mean, it's differentiated learning. So some kids learn well with the computer, some other students don't. And so the teacher makes that, a lot of times, that decision as to how they do it. But it's just kind of, it's out there, but I don't necessarily think we need to put it in.
I remember my days of writing master's theses and so on, when I was working on my two master's degrees, and everything was on an Underwood typewriter. I went to the library and went through the microfiche and so on and everything. No computers.
Right. Did you do a carbon copy for yourself too?
I did some of that, and I am always jealous of students today that have the advantages that we never, some of us never had. But I want to give them all the advantages we can give them.
So are we in or out on this one?
We're in on our side.
So we're in. We're in.
Yeah. Okay. So it sounds like even though I was withdrawn, we're going to bring it back. And so, just to confirm,
thank you.
For the record, and for then, it's on page 26, the last paragraph for impact of other cost inputs, where it says there is evidence that textbooks have seen significant cost growth, but this is a relatively small portion of the budget. We would add, recent legislation has supported community colleges and four-year public universities using free online textbooks, parentheses, open educational resources. The legislature and ODE should continue to study the use of free online textbooks, comma, access, and how to expand computer access for all students.
At school and
okay.
home.
Mm-hmm. At school and at home.
We're
okay.
all right?
Yep. For all yep. students at school
okay.
and at
Everybody's
home.
Everybody's happy with that.
At school and home. Okay. And then next edit. So it doesn't apply to a page number, but it was just a general recommendation that this committee should make a point to ODE, Brian Reeder, and the Quality Education Commission and their co-chairs that the report should be based on all PK through 12 funding resources, not just the general funds and the lottery funds going forward.
Okay.
I think it is. I think it always has. So I don't know that that's adding anything because they have always considered all those things. The question is, do we want to specifically write in a document after considering all of these monies? Here's the amount that we're short. That's the question. So whether it's needed or not, I mean, if there was clearly on this committee when the questions were asked a misunderstanding of whether all of the funds mm-hmm. were involved. I think we got a clear answer that they all were.
Yeah.
So if this clarification makes everybody understand that's what QEC has done all along and continues to do, then I'm okay. But I don't
doesn't
know.
Doesn't hurt
necessary.
To say it again.
Well, if it was so clear,
okay.
we wouldn't have the asking
I agree.
The question.
That's what,
okay.
that's,
so
that's,
there was no clarity,
what,
Matt,
yeah.
Mr. Senator. So.
There seems to have been no clarity. There
right.
was for me. I was totally clear.
That's
on
because
that
you're
one.
An educator.
Oh,
you understand
okay.
this. I'm a revenuer. I don't understand any of this stuff. I can count to 18, though.
Okay.
He's coming
wait,
forward.
Doug Wilson, LFO. I just want to make clear, I don't think you want the term PK in there because QEC is K through 12.
Sure.
They in the past have not included the PK dollars
that's true.
For
thank,
learning
thank
division.
For that. That's true.
So
that's good. Thank you.
Okay.
So Doug can articulate it better next time. See?
Okay. Okay. We all set on that one?
Yes.
Okay.
So we're not doing that, correct?
Right.
Okay.
We just did it.
Okay.
From the bench.
It was a bit okay. So for the executive summary, page 2, there was a suggestion that we, in the executive summary, and if we did this, we'd probably have to add it in the report, provide numbers on students who actually opt out of the testing. Mm-hmm. And I did talk to Brian Reeder about this from ODE, and he's here as well and can comment further. But they haven't done that in the past. Like, it's not in the QEC report. So for us to include that, like, they don't – so this report is really based on what the QEC report comes out with. We could ask them to provide us a number or a sentence or a line. We could add it in. But my suggestion would be if we're going to put it in the executive summary, we should probably have it in the report. Otherwise, it's just like the summary isn't necessarily a summary of the document.
Okay, do we want to hear? Brian, you want to come up?
Explain this here. I have no idea what we're talking about.
Co-chairs. Monroe and Smith Horner, members of the committee, Brian Reeder from
the
Department of Education.
Okay.
Typically, the QEC hasn't addressed the issue of opting out of assessments. You may recall that a number of years ago, not terribly long ago, opt-outs became an issue under federal law if participation in assessments in the state didn't reach a high enough level, there was a threat of losing federal funds. That hasn't happened, but at the same time, the legislature did change the law to allow more opt-outs or make it easier for students to opt out of the test. The department...
But I don't know.
The department would like to see as many students take the assessments as possible because it provides a lot of information both to teachers and schools and districts and the state on how we're doing. But it's not an issue that the QEC has really addressed as part of its charge.
Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'm just trying to track a lot because I had to ask what this was. Like, I'm a bean counter, as you well know. Thank you for the spreadsheets, and I sent them along to the rest of you, and I'll talk about those when we come to voting. But I guess as a bean counter, my logic here, and follow if I'm wrong, is this: we probably ought to track this someplace because if it becomes a concern that, you know, 95% of the people are opting out, we might have a problem here. Is this something you guys track, the department tracks? Is this something easy that, you know, you can, for better word, can be thrown into the report so it's flagged that, like, okay, we only have 3% of them opting out, or, oh, this is growing and this might be a problem? Is that something we should be tracking? And the professionals who are helping you put together the QEM ought to be tracking it?
Co-chairs Monroe and Smith Horner, Senator Boquist, yeah, the department tracks this student by student.
Right.
The QEC has not addressed the issue of opt-out as part of its work. I mean, it certainly could. The reality, though, is we educate those kids whether they take the test or not. So in terms of the impact on the cost of funding schools, I'm not sure it has one. But we obviously have the data on what share of kids drop out, who they are, what districts and schools they're in, and so forth. So, you know, if it would be useful to have that kind of information in the QEC report, we certainly can put it in there.
Yeah, for sure. I only see the usefulness because obviously he and I disagree because I don't know how I voted. And you're on the other side of this, and that's because we're not educated on this. And the way we get educated is have it in the QEM report so we can get educated. I'm just thinking that's obvious, but I don't know.
I would like to have it in, but Representative Morgan.
And I think part of this is, and there are many times I don't agree with Mr. Reeder, but I think on this one it is because this is kind of one of those statistics that's going to jump a lot. I mean, the opt-out movement was really big 2 years ago. It's not big now. Were there 98% of the school districts that had very few kids opt out, yet the numbers were big because in two or three school districts, large school districts, it was a real popular thing to do. So I think that it's more important for us to have the facts to use in legislation and to deal with that kind of thing as opposed to maybe having it in a report. So, because I think the facts, the statistics are going to be cyclical.
Yeah, one of the school districts that I represent a chunk of, Portland School District number one, had a lot opting out. Another school district that I represent most of, David Douglas, had very, very few opting out. So it is interesting. Representative Wisdom.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This was another one of my comments or questions, and I did refer to Mr. Reeder or defer to him. But committee members and public and anyone's interested in this, a lot of the report is based upon the test data. The QEC's data is, look at the charts we have in here about, you know, we're doing that. But if a significant number continues to opt out like they are, how good is that data? Mm-hmm. And that's back to my overall comment and my work on this special committee is, you know, we've been doing this since 2000. The first report wasn't 2000. We're doing this, and every year it's insufficient. And then I don't know how the hell they come up with this money amount. I could question some of the statistics, the amount of money that they come up with this maintenance. What the hell does that have to do with education? But how they come up with the amount of money. But we have to reform. No one in this room, because everyone in this room I know wants better education, wants better results from our kids. But I don't see where this effort we're going through helps. Give more money. There's nothing in the world that guarantees results because you put more money into it. You have to reform. You have to train teachers better. I brought this up because I know that it was a big issue on the floor of the House is whether you opt out or not, and the unions were concerned about it. Yep. They had one position, and other people had another position. But the data in the QEC report has all these charts about how people did in math and reading, and if you got people opting out of the test, what are we doing here, guys? Yep. I want to help improve education in Oregon and for future generations so they'll pay my Social Security.
So at the very least, we ought to at least know how many are opting out.
Yes, sir. I just think it's something, and we don't have to put it in the report now, but I think, again, I would like to see maybe this committee, the chairs, do a letter to the QEC talking about this and work together to see if we need to look at new ways to evaluate quality education. It's not just money. And
Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. So my question is something that you mentioned, Mr. Reeder, that there's federal requirements that if the percentage drops below a certain amount, it would be a problem. Have we ever gotten to that? Have we ever dropped below that percentage? Even though maybe that was only in effect for a year or two.
Co-Chair Smith-Warner, I believe we did drop below that, but the federal government did not follow up on their
threats.
I didn't want to use the word threat, but I can't think of another one.
Threat.
Oh, yeah.
That's fine. Because if I may follow up.
Go ahead.
What I'm trying to get to is has it been statistically significant? I guess that's, if what we're trying to figure out is it statistically significant to these results to know how many people are opting out? That is my kind of baseline question, is it statistically significant or not?
Co-Chair Smith-Warner, I think if you look at, given that we saw opt-outs concentrated in certain schools and school districts, in evaluating the results for those schools and districts, if the opt-outs are high enough, it could mean that we, looking at the test scores of only those students who took the test, could give an inaccurate picture of where all of the students as a group are if you include those who opted out. I myself haven't done the analysis to say did enough drop out to make the results statistically different than they would be if those students hadn't opted out. At a statewide level, I think it's, again, I haven't done the analysis myself, but since the opt-outs were concentrated in a few places, if you look at test scores at the statewide level, it's probably true that it didn't affect whether our results are accurate or not. Having said that, we get a lot more information about test scores at the district and the school level because it helps tell us at what grades and in what subject areas improvement needs to happen. If you'd like, I can talk with our assessment folks to see what kind of work they've done in evaluating, how the opt-out problem has affected our confidence in the test results.
Because if I may, ultimately, that's what we're trying to determine, right? Gene, would you agree that's what we're trying to determine, is have the numbers been impacted by...
Well, yeah.
Ultimately, that's what you're trying to get to.
And I think I have some background in the ESSA that all that's going to change and could change, and, as we keep talking about which tests we're going to take and everything, too. But my point is the charts and all this data talks about testing data, and if that test data is only 60% of the population, what good is it if it's only 70%?
And what I hear Mr. Reeder saying is that in those specific school districts where there was a very high opt-out number, it would probably have an effect, undoubtedly, in comparing their results to the general results of the entire state, but that the results of the entire state, since those opt-out students are concentrated in a few districts, probably the overall results wouldn't be greatly challenged.
Co-chairs Monroe, Smith, Warner, Representative Wisnett, I want to make clear we're not talking about the participation 30%. Rate being down near 60 or 70%. It's in the mid-90%.
Right.
So
took the test.
I mean,
right. Certain school districts are.
Yeah.
None of them are even there. There aren't any school districts this
now. Even individual school districts are not down. They're down around 90% at the lowest. And so we're not talking about a mass exodus of students.
Can clarify once.
Could you
confirm that the ones opting out are high performers or low performers?
It's a mix. There's no standard profile. And a lot of it has to do with parents' feelings about standardized testing, and that's not you know, a high performing versus low performing issue. It's more about
again.
Parent.
I brought this up, but deferred to Mr. Reeder's decision if it's a big factor or not. That is
Senator Roblin.
My frustration is we mix all this stuff up, and people don't necessarily have a good understanding of mathematics and random sampling and all that kind of stuff anyway. And so everybody says, you know, I have to have 98% or whatever. And I'm thinking one of the big reports in here is TIMSS and the different international testing that our kids take. What percentage of kids take that test?
No.
Co-chairs Monroe, Smith, Warner, Senator Roblin, it's low.
Right. It's like 1 in 2%.
Yeah. And
randomly selected, and they give all the data on it. So we keep thinking about these things because we want to know what every individual kid is doing. We want to track all of their information. And I don't know that that is really what our schools should be doing. They should be trying to figure out, are we doing well at what we're doing? And you can do that with randomly selected numbers of people. You don't have to do every single one to get that information that helps understand the system. So I get a little frustrated from time to time on this one in particular. And truthfully, I agree with our chair. Some school districts do a better job of explaining what the test is for and why it's there and why it's important, and those kids tend to take it. And there's other school districts that don't do a very good job of that, and those parents get upset because they're not getting any data back that's significant to them, so why should they make their kids taste it? And then there's a third group of people who believe that if you ask the teachers who actually read the work that the kids do on a regular basis all year long, they can give you a better answer to respect of how well that student has learned than any of these one-day tests or three-week tests or however long we're going to give them. So, I mean, assessment is a really big issue, and it's one that frustrates me a lot because we spend a lot of time having conversations about it. We spend a lot of time putting our kids through it in ways that for some of them is really harmful. We do need to figure out, is the system working? Are we getting better results? Can we get better results? I'm shocked that a lot of people think that private schools do a really good job, and they don't do any of it.
Class size?
Yes.
Sometimes
their overall results are
I'm just
better,
telling you.
Sometimes they're worse.
I'm just saying this is not the be-all, end-all, and putting it in reports, all of a sudden, once you put something in print about X percentage or that percentage, then everybody can make their own decision about how important that is without any real knowledge of how important it is. And that frustrates me a little bit from time to time.
Reminds me of my own teaching experience where I taught advanced placement, and my students got college credit or didn't get college credit based on a one-day test at the end of the year. And then I switched over, our school district switched over, my recommendation, to something called Project Advance, where I was certified by the community college as being a community college level professor. And I determined from the whole year's work whether my students got college credit or didn't get college credit. I thought it was a far better system, frankly. Okay, where are we? Are we wanting testing to be included in this? The number of people that opt out of tests to be included? It's not been done that way in the past. So if we want to change that and include statistics on opting out, then we need to comment on that.
Could I propose that going forward, because the charts that are in here, these are put together for this report. Is that correct?
What do you mean?
They're from other places as well, but
yes.
The exhibits about the scores and everything, they're
yes.
put together for this report. So I would argue, or I would propose that we, going forward in 2 years when this committee meets again, if it does, that be part of the request, that if there are either if there are significant numbers of kids not taking the test, of, you know, if there is statistical significance to the number of abstentions from the testing, that be noted in the data that's presented to this committee for this report.
But not having the QEC do it. I don't think the
correct. No, not having the QEC do it. I just wanted to make clear, because these are things that are put together for this report. Let's not go back up the food chain.
Waving this thing in front of you every day.
Is that fine with the rest of the committee?
Mm-hmm. The House fine with that.
Okay, we'll follow.
My only thing about it is, so we're going to get a report that lists every school district, and within every school district, every subgroup population within that subgroup, and how many of them opted out. So that that's what the federal government does. It isn't about opt out. It's like if you have 10 or more students that represent any substantial subgroup, if one of those kids opts out, then they all of a sudden are 90% and they've already messed up the whole thing. So that's the amount of information you want. Sorry about that.
Is that the amount of information we need to make a decision?
I don't know.
You're the expert.
No,
I would say no. But but how else are they supposed to give the information? Because that's how we as a school have to report it.
No, that is not what I'm seeking.
Mostly
I'm just saying I don't think we should be telling QEC to do this, but that's not what this is. These charts are not. QEC doesn't do this. These are charts that are put together for this report. Mm-hmm. And so I would I'll rescind that and say no.
My feeling is that
we
in the education committee should have this conversation. I don't think it needs to be here, mm-hmm. and I think that the significant one is the difficult one to me. Is that this is not a catch-all for all things. I didn't think it was anyway when I've gotten this the last few years that I've been on this committee. Having that information come to the committees is a good thing. It needs to happen. But you're going to find this statewide, we're at 95, 96, 97%. And the next year it's 94.3, and the next year it's 98.4. Yeah. We're not talking about insignificant amounts of kids taking tests. Most of them are taking the test.
Mm-hmm. Well, so. I've been doing this for a decade now, and this process this year with Aletha and others has been more thorough,
absolutely,
really, than it's ever been during my 10 years.
It's been very good.
We've had excellent staff work, and it's outstanding. And hopefully, the final product will be useful. Okay, yep. Senator Boquist.
Thank you. Sometimes I wish I was a representative.
You did that for a while, didn't you?
Yeah.
Not to be, beat the horse here, but I think we all discussed earlier at the top here that, we've been at this 10 or 12 years, and we didn't do alternative one, which was, give them 10 years and a bunch of money. We didn't do alternative two, because when you get back on page 26 or 27, people really start arguing about whether that's the best alternative or not. I would have preferred to just put an alternative and drive the stake in the ground and let's go to battle right now. Because, again, what we've been doing until this year hasn't worked, just when we're talking about getting money. Right? You can't convince somebody, and I don't know what happens in the education committees. I don't want to know. I sit on a revenue committee. And anytime the word education comes up, and anytime we talk about revenue, that's QEM is waived in that committee as the gospel according to Luke. And guess what, folks? we haven't gotten to 18, and we haven't gotten to 36. So the gospel needs to be expanded outside of Luke, and it needs to be proven that it's going to work. And so in my mind, and I'm fine, and I understand perfectly what Madam Co-Chair is saying, it's like, look, we can't go back and rewrite these charts. We don't know what's in here. But going forward, in the next 6 to 8 months, Mr. Reeder knows what I'm talking about. Well, there's a few people in this room know what I'm talking about. In the next 6 to 8 months, we're going to have to statistically prove that whatever's in this QEM is the right way to go. And so this is not an end-all. This is a beginning state right now. So I would go back to the point and say, and if it's, Representative Daugherty pointed out a good point, is if it only goes back and forth 2 points, it's not an issue. But it's not an issue because we don't know that it's not an issue. And we're back to simple mathematics, colleagues. If you want $2 billion, you got to get to 18 and 36, okay? It's just that simple. And so I would say, back to Madam Co-Chair, she and I don't agree on very many things, but at this particular point, wait a minute. We can't rewrite the report now because we're out of time, but going forward, we should say, hey, what is the statistical accuracy of this report? And Mr. Senator, if it's a whole page with a spectrum that all of us go glassy-eyed and the bottom says, oh, it's only a 2% error, well, then fine, it's a 2% error, and you read the rest of the chart. Right. But then when they wave the QEM around in their hand, we know exactly what its statistical validity is because that thing's going to be waved around more than handkerchiefs are in the next 9 months. I can tell you that right now. So I would say, Madam Co-Chair, I'd put your motion back in there, whatever it is, and going forward, we really need to evaluate this thing.
Okay, so the recommendation of the co-chair is that in 2 years when we do this again, that we consider these the number of students that have opted out. Okay.
Sounds good.
Moving on.
So that was the last
Mr. Reeder, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks, Brian. So that was the last recommendation for this committee on items that need to be discussed. And so then going forward, we're not going to add in the opt-out testing data in this report. What has happened in previous biennia, and it was 3 or 4 biennia ago when this happened, was there was a letter sent from the co-chairs, and Senator Monroe, you might remember, there was a letter sent from the co-chairs to the president and the speaker just taking note of something that came up in committee, and in the future they would like the next committee to study it. So we can draft that, and it can go out from the co-chairs, and we can, you know, copy all the committee and just say this was something that we want you guys to think about going forward.
Great. Barbara, is that good?
It sounds good.
Okay.
Perfect.
It is so ordered.
So moved.
Okay.
Close to finish?
Yes, we are close to finishing.
Okay, I just am going to kind of, well, not pontificate, but just give people a historical perspective. And every time the QEM comes up, my blood starts to boil because I remember when it first came out. And I started looking back at the funding history that we have in the state of Oregon for schools, and it really is kind of telling. And so I started thinking back, and, you know, I was an educator for 10 years and then worked with the schools for another 25, 30. But it all started in 1967, the summer of 1967. It was not the summer of love. It was the summer where we in Portland schools, the students went door to door asking for money to have our athletics and activities funded because the school didn't have enough money because most of it was dealing with, local funds. And most of funding in Oregon was through local property taxes and so on. You know, I start looking at 1973 to 1976 is when I started teaching. I got laid off the first 3 years I was teaching, myself and another 1,000 other teachers, because we had a year-to-year operating levy. Some districts had year-to-year operating levies because they had merged. Some people had tax bases that had been passed in 1919. Some people had 3-year operating levies. Some people had nothing. And so we started looking at things like that. And I remember in 1973 that I don't know if any of you remember the McCall plan. And what it was is Tom McCall came up with a plan to fund education. Yeah. And basically what it was is the state would pay for 90% of education support. This was back when it was still all property taxes. They would freeze property taxes. and they would pay for it, the increases, by increasing our personal income tax by 30%.
Yep.
And actually, it went to the ballot. It was going to be a constitutional amendment, and it didn't go down by that much.
It did better than the sales tax proposals.
Well, and then I was going to go through, and I said, remember when I worked for OEA, we got a sales tax proposal on the ballot to go through, and that it would be a 3% sales tax. All of it would go to K-12 education. We would lower property taxes. And the first time it went down 9-1. The second time it went down 8-1. But I think the most frustrating thing is, and then you go through, and in the late 80s, we had safety net. And we had districts that couldn't get levies passed.
Yep.
Increases, and so they closed. And we had from 1972 to 1987, 13 school districts closed, a total of 187 days, impacting 97,000 students. And what it was is they didn't have it. So we had the safety net where, without the vote of the people, you could have the same budget as you had the year before. But if you have the same budget you have the year before and more students and so on, again, that's when services started going down. And then we have ballot measure 5, and it goes on and on. And so I guess my plea and my hope is the people who this affects are not the parents, and it's not us. It is the kids.
That's right.
And we see kids coming into school with more and more issues and problems and trauma, and we don't have the money to deal with them. And we so desperately want to, but it's the idea of resources. And so I guess my plea with this is that we're going to continue to do the QEM, and we're going to continue to go through and say we can't fund it and so on and so forth. But I guess my plea is just at least for the kids that are coming out, we need to do something about funding education in Oregon so we don't go through this cyclical up and down and up and down and up and down, because it isn't fair to the kids. And I'm done.
Okay. Additional comments or questions before we start voting?
We can comment after the motion's made.
Okay.
Right?
Madam Co-Chair, you want to make the motion?
Chairman Rowe, I move to adopt the report on public education appropriation as amended.
Okay. Comments, questions, discussion? Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I made enough copies, but...
Okay.
First off, I want to thank the members of the committee for tolerating this particular revenue center sitting in your education group. I also want to thank the Mr. Reeder and the members of QEM Commission, because I've sat on revenue basically all of 12 years, and I don't know how many times the QEM has been waved around in front of me. And until this process came up, and with the help of Mr. Reeder and staff, I didn't even understand the QEM, so it's been sort of an educational experience. I did ask Ms. Reeder to look at some historical data, which is committee staff has put on record on OLS. And the reason for that is that I do not know, I cannot speak for the other chamber, but I do know that the Senate has been discussing in leadership, you know, a way forward to answer, Madam Representative, your question. And that does take getting to 18 and 36 or some series of functions. The one thing I've learned about the QEM in this process right here is the value. I think it is seriously underestimated by members of the legislature, including myself, of the value of that process and understanding it. It does, though, have limitations. And to get to either a vote count or that gets you a revenue package, to my extreme far right over here, or coming one step back gets you to the reforms, the QEM is actually an exceptional model to do those sorts of reforms by. But it is one-third of the equation to go forward, and it is a rather complex equation, which I won't go into, but senior members here and most of the staff out there, and as you've pointed out, Mr. Co-Chair, that I mean, you wrote something and it went down in flames decades ago, so this is not an easy process. So the people who think that this is going to be an easy process going forward, I do think we need to go forward, and we need to go forward for exactly the same reasons that Representative Daugherty pointed out.
you know, I have had six children in three different school districts and in private school, and I'm quite familiar that we have now screwed this bloody thing up so bad that we got to fix it for them and their grandchildren. So I'm committed to that. Having said that, I do not want the QEM to be waved around, unfortunately, on a unanimous vote, and say, well, this is the solution, let's just go throw money at this. I do not believe, in my inquiries at this committee and certainly my experience in revenue, if we all went to page 28, and then I'll get off my soapbox here, if we all went to page 28 in the draft report and there are 11 items outlined that equate to the $1.7 billion, and I'll point, the letter I wrote talks about the original gap, 1.9. Of those 11 items, if we just picked one, and I don't really care what you did, it's your favorite, whether it's recommendation two that was on there, I do not think we would get it through both chambers and out the other door with the performance measures on. I think far too many stakeholders, well, no, we want the $300 million or the $200 million or the $1 billion, but we want to spend it how we want to spend it. Not how the QEM says we ought to spend it. And I actually think I'm getting more convinced that the QEM makes more sense than it ever has before. And so I am a no vote on the overall report. Sorry, Mr. Chair, you don't get unanimous. And I'm that for the reason that I believe that over the next 12 to 18 months, we're going to have a much wider discussion than in education committees of how to go forward. And not just in this arena, but it doesn't matter whether you want to reform the retirement system. It doesn't matter if you want to reform health care. None of that matters if you don't have an educated workforce. And we don't have an educated workforce for the future unless we start at preschool. And that's 13 years before we get one out of high school if we agree that K-12 is the way to go. And so I just want to ask that committee staff put it on OLIS afterwards. I continue to be optimistic that we can find a solution in the future. And this is a third of at least the education piece. I would just implore the other members of here to reach out to your own leadership in both caucuses and in both chambers and say, you can't go to the ballot without a comprehensive solution. And you go to the ballot two ways out of this building. You either send it to the ballot or we do something they don't like and they put it on the ballot in 60 days. And in either way, it's going to the ballot. It doesn't really matter. And so I greatly appreciate my colleagues listening. I greatly appreciate the Department of Education and the work they put in and the commission members that have put in the QEM. And for probably the first time in 12 years, I actually do grasp it now and grasp the value of it. And I think, I mean, if I started pulling sheets out in the revenue committee and said, we could support this piece right here if you all vote yes, I think many of the stakeholders would be running for cover. And I'm looking forward for them crawling under their cover or coming to the work groups in the next year. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Good point. Thank you very much. And during the years that I was chair of the Revenue Committee from 1984 to 1989, the first thing I did was authored sales tax proposal in 85, which actually did better than most of the sales tax proposals. But remember that when you're amending the Constitution and when you're talking about changing tax law, you almost always are. It has to be voted on by the public. So that was voted on by the public. It got about a third of the vote, which was better than most sales tax do. 2 years later, I authored, again, as chair of the Revenue Committee, I authored the school safety net that Representative Doherty talked to us about because we were closing school districts, actually closing them down. And I thought that was absolutely unacceptable. So we studied the issue and we found that if we put a proposal on the ballot that had an automatic growth factor, which everybody knows school funding should have, that it wouldn't pass. And so we put a measure on the ballot that had no automatic growth factor, simply said you can budget the amount you had last year, and if you keep doing that year after year, pretty soon you're ratcheting down education. But at least you're keeping the schools open in the short run. And so we did that. It put it on the ballot, had to be on the ballot, had constitutional amendment, and it passed. And so for a few years there, from about 87 until 90, that was the law of the land, and we didn't close any schools during that time. Then in 90, of course, along came Measure 5. And we all know about Measure 5 and how it's completely changed the way we fund schools. shifted it virtually from property tax to income tax and so on. And then along came the laws requiring us to take this action every 2 years that we're in the process of taking. So it's been a long time. Some of us have been working on it for a long time. Some of us will hopefully keep working on it for a little while longer.
Yeah, myself, huh?
Okay. The motion is to approve the, Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Chairs, co-chairs, and committee members, I'm going to be a yes. I do believe the amount of money that K-12 received this budget was insufficient, but I also want to, my however comment that we didn't put in, is that remember that we did increase the K-12 budget significantly.
11%.
I think that I can take, I go away with the fact that we increased the data in this report about the cost drivers. And my saying it's insufficient, maybe I don't agree with the QEM, or QEC, as I said, about how they come up with their dollar amount, because they did not look and they did not address the fact that less and less of the dollar, each dollar we give K-12 goes to the classrooms, training teachers, improving and reforming our education. It goes to benefits. And school districts are facing a tremendous. If you read paragraph 2 on page 26, you see a lot of important data there that's facing school boards every year. When more and more of the dollars we give them are not going to help train teachers to reduce the class size, but are going for benefits. And I'm not sure that we can ever get there, but I think the report, and that's why I think we need to help use the QEC. It's we can use it and see if we can look at how to get the most out of our dollars we do have and address the cost cutters. If we don't address the cost cutters, I'm sorry, Mr. Co-Chair, I don't believe we'll ever be able to fund it enough. I was here when, you know, I wasn't here as long as you were, but I was here when Speaker Menas proposed 50% of the budget be K-12. Remember that?
Yep.
And that would take away all the arguments. We're going to give half the budget right off the bat. But I do appreciate the work that was put into this to come up with the cost drivers. I hope the public will read that, and our leadership will read that, and this committee will read that. We have to address the cost drivers, or we'll never be able to fund it sufficiently. Thank you.
Well said. Additional? Okay, the motion is to approve the report as amended. Senator Roblin seconds the motion. And we will call the roll, please, on the motion to approve as amended.
Yeah.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Wisnant?
Aye.
Chair Smith Warner?
Aye.
Senator Roblin?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Bocas?
No, thank you.
Co-Chairman Doe?
Aye. Motion carries. Is there anything else for this committee before we adjourn permanently, at least until 2 years from now? And please, Representative Doherty, Smith Warner, myself, and Senator Roblin will stay in your place for a very brief meeting with Mr. Wilson. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you very much.